You ever feel like the pressures of life are going to drive you mad? That if one more thing goes wrong, you might just snap? Well, today on Disclosure, we're going to look at a very prominent historical figure who lost his mind because everything was going right. And we'll look at why that story is important for you in these last days of Earth's history. If you want to keep your sanity, you're going to want to see this program today. I'll be right back. When you read through the news headlines every day, sometimes it seems like the whole world is starting to lose its collective mind. People are just taking to the streets to riot for just about any cause, including who wins or loses the Stanley Cup playoffs. I saw this story a little while ago about a mother who actually gave her 9-month-old baby a tattoo after a heavy night of drinking. Kids have been beating up homeless people, and they post videos of what they did on YouTube for other people's entertainment. And recently, in the space of about a week of time, we had 4 or 5 completely disturbing stories about sadistic murder and cannibalism right here in North America. And then we had a story about a teacher who actually showed a video of a murder and dismemberment to his 10th grade class. Now, you know, if these were just isolated incidents, random stories that happen once in a while, we could write them off as anomalies, as something a little out of the ordinary. But lately, have you noticed it seems like the world is getting more troubled by the minute? It's like our civilization is starting to crumble, that we're slowly losing our grip on reality. So what in the world is going on? Is it possible that all the progress we made in the 20th century wasn't really progress at all? Could it be that all the advancement has actually made us worse as people? I mean, way back when, they used to promise us that in the future we'd have an easier life, that technology would make things simpler. But instead, it feels like we're all driving in the fast lane now, and more of us are starting to crack under pressure. I mean, just think about it. Nowadays, there's no getting away from the pressure. When you finally get home from work, your cell phone can still ring. They can send you another email at home late at night, and your cell phone lights up on your nightstand with a text message at midnight that demands your immediate attention. You can't get away from it. And you know, if we were actually getting ahead, if all this stuff was actually making life better, it might make it easier to take. But when you add the fact that all that work is just barely paying your bills, well, maybe that has something to do with the way we're cracking, the way we're behaving now. Maybe that's why we're starting to snap. But what about people who snap when everything's going fine? The Bible tells the story of an ancient king who conquered the whole known world, an accomplishment which probably caused him a great deal of stress. But after he was finished conquering the world, when he actually had some time off and he was resting comfortably in his achievements, that's when it happened. He completely lost his mind. But it wasn't the onset of dementia. It wasn't a strange neurological disease, as we can tell. It was something much more significant, something that will eventually get every one of us if we don't understand why it happened to him. In fact, it might just be the real key to why our world is coming apart. Is it possible that something that happened to one person more than 2,500 years ago might actually hold the key to understanding what's happening to us right now? And is it possible that you could avoid losing your peace of mind if you just understood this ancient king's secret? Well, today on Disclosure, we're actually going to answer that question. But just before we get to that, it's time now for the Bible in the News. This week's news story has a distinctly Canadian flair. A few weeks ago, Michelle Higgins of Gander, Newfoundland, was driving to work when she suddenly plowed head-on into a moose. Now, I can assure you that in Canada, that's not an unusual story. It happens all the time. In fact, a few years ago, I actually stopped with the nose of my van right underneath a moose's belly. It happens. But this story's a little bit different. After hitting the moose and doing considerable damage to her vehicle, Michelle actually finished driving the 25 miles to work, and she didn't remember hitting the moose. And that was with two broken bones in her neck and a hoof print on her face. You know, it was only when she got out of her car and saw how badly damaged it was that she realized something was wrong. I mean, the vehicle was completely trashed, and she was covered with blood and fur. So she went to the hospital. Now, let me ask you this question. How do you hit a moose head on? I mean, that's a massive animal. How do you hit a moose and not even notice? The most likely explanation, they think, is that hitting that moose completely knocked her silly and caused short-term memory loss. And it kind of makes me wonder if traumatic stuff could happen to me and I might not even notice. You know, to be honest, it probably happens every day. After thousands of years of living in rebellion against the Creator, we've actually gotten so used to sin and suffering that sometimes we don't even recognize it. It's familiar. Maybe it's even comfortable at times. But you know, it wasn't always like that. We weren't always used to sin. I mean, try to imagine how traumatic it must have been for Adam to witness death for the very first time. How clear it must have been that his rebellion caused that. And try to imagine the very first funeral, a funeral for a child. Adam and Eve putting their youngest son in the ground, and they didn't have a funeral home. There were no silk-lined caskets, no flowers, no cards, no notes, just a hole in the ground and the limp body of their son. That had to be tough, and it had to be very real. But you know, you and I can listen to dozens of news stories that illustrate human misery on the news every night, and it barely elicits an emotional response. We've been knocked so silly by sin that we have trouble recognizing it. And like poor Michelle Higgins, we drive the next 25 miles through life wondering why our faces are covered with blood. We find ourselves at a loss to explain the pain and suffering we deal with on a daily basis because we've forgotten the original story of what happened. But go to the great physician to find out why you hurt. And he'll not only show you why life is leaving you battered and bruised, he'll show you how to move past the pain. Spend a thoughtful moment in the words of the Bible, and it's all going to come back. You will remember. And the good news is, it's also going to demonstrate that God has a foolproof plan to make sure it never happens on this planet again. Now, we're going to look at the book of Daniel chapter 4, a critical chapter for understanding the human condition during last day events. So you might want to get your Bible and follow along. And grab your cell phone too, because I want you to call in tonight or text and join this conversation. I'm going to be right back with the man who lost his mind. And by that, I don't mean my guest. I'll be right back.
Because of you, Hope Channel is reaching lives around the world.
I want everyone to know that being able to watch the Hope Channel is an experience that can add dramatically to their lives. It can help them in growing their faith to God and to Jesus Christ. It can change your life in the way that you're living. And my life has changed dramatically in a number of ways.
Hope Channel is changing lives because of the support of viewers like you. If you'd like to assist financially with the mission of Hope Channel, call us at 888-4-HOPE-TV. That's 888-4-HOPE-TV. Or write us at the following address.
It's kind of fitting that we're back in the Old Testament book of Daniel on the show today because my guest shares his name with the Old Testament prophet. He's Pastor Daniel McKibben, a minister, a speaker, an evangelist who's passionate about Bible prophecy. And when you get to know him, you know, he's also passionate about Jesus Christ. Now, he's just arrived stateside with his family from New Zealand, and you're going to be seeing more of him and his family on Hope Channel, especially this coming fall. Daniel, I am so glad that you've made it across the ocean that you are here on Disclosure.
Yeah,
now, but you aren't actually you're not originally from New Zealand. You've just come back from New Zealand.
That's right. We've been there for 10 years, and I'm originally from Colorado.
Oh, wow. Colorado, the high country.
Yes.
You know, I've done some preaching in Colorado, and I always find when I land there and get into any of the churches that are up in the Rockies, I find myself struggling to breathe as mm-hmm. I preach. It's just really yes. thin air.
Yeah. I lived there for all my life, and if I go above 14,000, I get altitude sick.
14,000. You know, I remember getting a little lightheaded above 10,000 once mm-hmm. because I was hiking strenuously and didn't think about the fact that I was so high up. Well, you've come over from New Zealand. You were there for 10 years. I've got to tell the audience I am not old enough to have done anything for 10 years. But, you're laughing at me now, Pastor. But I'm not old enough to have been anywhere for 10 years. Well, maybe so.
Maybe so.
Hey, listen, I know that you are... You're an evangelist. You have preached the book of Daniel to crowds all over the place in New Zealand and here. And you're passionate about this. And I'm just delighted that you're here tonight to walk me through a chapter that is, you know, a lot of people don't think of it as prophetic. But I'm convinced that all the stories of Daniel somehow point us to last day conditions or events. So tonight we're going to look at
Daniel 4.
Daniel chapter 4. Well, I guess I should open up to it. I should have known before we even came out here. Mm-hmm. That a true professional had his Bible open already, but I did not. Daniel chapter 4, and if you're following along at home, you are going to want to follow what the Word says in Daniel chapter 4. Let's look at this story. It's fairly well known. Obviously, this is the story where Nebuchadnezzar loses his mind. Mm-hmm. But as we're looking at it, it's interesting to me that this story doesn't take place at the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's career. I mean, this is, some time has gone by since the stories we studied in Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 3, maybe even decades, some people think, by the time we come here. And this is the story of Nebuchadnezzar's conversion. It's the last thing we hear about him. He becomes a believer. But here's what I'm wondering about, and I want to ask a minister this question. Mm-hmm. Often when I hear Christians, Pastor, talking about conversion, they tell these instantaneous, miraculous stories. I was sitting in a motel, and I had a gun because I was going to end it all, and suddenly an angel showed up and said, "Don't do that," and I was converted that night, and it happens very quickly, and people define it as the moment I was saved. Mm. But this takes a long time. Mm. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar, God obviously been working with him in chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4. Tell me as a minister, and from the people you have seen and worked with, what can we learn from this story in Nebuchadnezzar with regards to how God works through the process of conversion? Are they all instantaneous?
Well, what we call instantaneous conversion is probably something that's been happening for years, but you come to a point where you make that decision. And for myself, for instance, I had this instant conversion. I went from the New Age movement, drug using, almost overnight, and accepted Jesus, and it was just like a huge weight taken off my shoulders. I was so joyful and so happy. But you know what, Sean? It probably took 3 or 4 years for that to actually happen, because I had a lot of people planting seeds in my mind, people giving me, you know, maybe a Bible verse. Or
so as you look back now, there was a moment, there was a decisive moment.
Yes,
and I think
yes.
in Nebuchadnezzar's story, there's a decisive moment. Mm. But when you look back, you can see that God was actually working with you over quite a period of time.
That's right. And you look at the disciples, 3.5 years with Jesus. Now, when we look at the end of their 3.5 years, if you understand your Bible, you would say maybe they weren't converted. And, you know, they were contending for the highest place, and they were just fighting with each other. And I think it was around the day of Pentecost when they were actually converted.
Well, it's interesting. Near the end of that time with Jesus, Jesus actually says to Peter, "I'm praying for you. Satan wants to have you, and I'm praying that you be converted."
Yeah.
That's a remarkable statement. 3 years with Jesus and not converted, but you're saying that that happens in a lot of people's lives.
Oh, it's very common, because people have to process it. They have to think about it. And, you know, Christianity is very intelligent. And people think you have to put your brain outside the door to be a Christian, but you don't. You have to put your brain inside your head, because Christianity is a very intelligent religion. And so when people are deciding to become a Christian or not become a Christian, they have to think about it. And so it's very logical that it would take time.
Well, let me ask you this, because you just mentioned that you had an instantaneous moment, but there was a background. Do you see yourself at all in the story of Nebuchadnezzar and his conversion? Did you have a similar experience, God working with you for some time, and then God brings it to a close?
Oh, yeah, very much so. And at the time, I didn't know it. I didn't know that God was working in my life. But as I look back on it now, yes, he certainly was. So very much similar to what Nebuchadnezzar went through. He was very much a pagan. I kind of got into paganism through the New Age movement and through using drugs. And so, yeah, there's some similarities there.
Well, okay, so God does work with people. I think, as I'm thinking about it, I can go back over my own life story. And there was a decisive moment where I said, yes, I am a believer. I am a Christian. I am giving everything to Jesus. There was a moment in my early 20s where that happened. But as I look back now, I can see these moments all the way back to early childhood where God was clearly trying to get my attention.
Yes, yes.
So God does work with people over a long time, and it's important that we don't try and force something that they might
Absolutely.
Not be ready for. But on the other hand, let me ask you this, because I sometimes hear Christians say, all right, you see Bill there. Bill's been sitting in church for 20 years, and he's never made a decision for Christ, so it's probably just not his time, and it's not God's time for Bill yet. Is that... I mean, that seems to be the other end of the spectrum, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's certainly not biblical. Biblically speaking, your time with God is right now. And a matter of fact, we've got a verse in Acts 17 and verse 30, and
right.
maybe we should look that one up, is that God is calling every person to follow him. And if we put that off, Sean, it's a hardening of heart that happens. And I just really want to appeal to our viewing audience is if you hear God speaking to you, now is the time to respond to that. Don't wait for God to work heavier in your life because you could harden your heart. And so in Acts chapter 17 and verse 30.
Okay.
You want to read that or you want me to?
Acts 17, verse 30. Truly these times of ignorance, and God, this is Paul addressing the issue of idolatry. Truly these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent.
All right, and the key word is now. And so God is calling every one of us now. So to say it's not God's timing for that person to be converted is not biblical. The biblical model is that as soon as we hear God speaking, we respond to that speaking. But on the other side of the coin is God is patient and long-suffering, and he doesn't just throw us away if we don't respond the first time or the second time or the 100th time, as we can see here in Nebuchadnezzar's story.
Well, let's look at his story again for a moment, because he's got this really funny on-again, off-again relationship with God. In Daniel 2 and verse 47, way back at the beginning of, you know, this after the dream, the statue, He sounds like a believer. Truly, your God, he says to Daniel, is the God of gods. So, all right, Daniel, your God is God. Then he builds an idolatrous statue. Everybody's got to worship that.
Yep.
So he's back on the other side of the fence. And in Daniel 3, by the end of that chapter, in verse 29, I make a decree, any people, language, or nation that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So now he's got legal protection for the Jews. Then he's back in chapter 4, and he starts out prideful. He's on again, off again, on again, off again. So let me ask you this. Why does that happen? Why do we do that with God? Why do we flirt with a relationship with God for years and years and years and flip-flop?
Well, it's the human nature. It's human nature is that, you know, we're comfortable where we're at and we want to be where we're at. And the Bible does say that sin is pleasurable or sin is desirable. And so we've got a lot of things working against us. However, a relationship with Jesus Christ is even more pleasurable than sin, and it's more powerful as well. And so if people understood that, I think they would be more willing to give up, you know, those things that are they're keeping them from a relationship with Jesus.
Well, let's talk about what Nebuchadnezzar's problem might have actually been, because as you get into this story, he's at ease. The years of war appear to be over, or at least it's eased off. He's in his palace. It's in Daniel 4, verse 4. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. Now, maybe wealth was part of the problem for him. I mean, Jesus did say it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get into heaven. So let me ask this question. Is God against wealth?
Well, is God against you owning a car, owning a house, or something like that? The answer is no. God's not against wealth. There were a lot of very godly men and women in the Bible who were wealthy. The problem is not wealth. The problem is making that your God. So you can make your car your God, your house your God, your wealth your God. However, we have to understand that wealth brings with it a danger. And that is exactly what you said about Nebuchadnezzar, Sean, is he was comfortable. As a matter of fact, the original word was to be secure, resting in my house. So Nebuchadnezzar, we got this view from the Bible that he felt completely secure in what he had. And that was the danger.
Well, how does that become a danger for him? Because, I mean, I agree. There were a lot of wealthy people among God's people. Abraham was what appears to be fabulously wealthy, at least at one point in his life. Joseph of Arimathea, Nicodemus, those two guys, they say, had enough money between them to pay everybody's salary in Jerusalem for a year. I mean, they were loaded.
Filthy.
So the problem isn't wealth itself. It becomes a problem when...
Well, it becomes a problem when you depend on that for your comfort, your peace, your joy, your happiness. And wealthy people can have a tendency to do that because it's just natural.
Now, sometimes, though, you know, we pick on wealthy people and say, all right, they're not responding to the gospel because they got everything and they're wealthy, and that's a big stumbling block. But sometimes I've discovered that wealth really isn't the only factor. Poor people struggle with the gospel just as much, don't they?
Absolutely. You know, I worked in California for a few months doing Bible work, and we had railroad tracks that kind of separated the wealthy part of the community to the unwealthy. And when we did door knocking in the wealthy part, we got very little response. In the poorer part, we got people opening their doors. However, once you presented the gospel and taking up your cross and following Jesus, then they struggled just as much as the wealthy people did.
So it's not just wealth or non-wealth. There is another issue at stake. And we're going to have to take a break. I can't believe we've burned through a whole section already. We're going to have to take a break. And I want to come back to that question and then dig into his dream a little bit. And what I want you to know is tonight, we're going to have a drawing for this book, if you call in, The Presence. It's by an author who's not very good. I wrote this some years ago. Actually, this is a book on the prophecies found in the Old Testament sanctuary, and I want to share that with you. As a matter of fact, if we take your call on the air tonight, you will get a copy of this book. And we're going to be right back looking at the dream found in Daniel chapter 4, the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had that gets to the root of his problem and how that relates to the last days. We're going to be back in just a moment with more on Daniel chapter 4.
One of the biggest mistakes that people make after a marital breakup is to jump into another relationship far too soon.
We believe that it takes 2 to 3 years for an individual to work through the hurts of a failed marriage, examine what went wrong, perhaps see a counselor, and talk through some of what has happened. Admit the fact that you may have some bad habits and work to getting rid of those habits.
In addition to getting rid of habits, you need to consider whether or not you've really healed emotionally from the previous relationship and whether or not you're ready to enter into a new intimate relationship with someone else. Seek professional counsel. Allow yourself to go through the process of healing and being ready for a new relationship. A good rule of thumb is to move slowly and carefully with God's help through prayer.
And we're back studying Daniel chapter 4, the day that Nebuchadnezzar lost his mind, and what that tells us about last day conditions and last day events. In a little bit, you're going to get a chance to join our discussion. You can call me at 888-730-HOPE-4673. And I hope you call in again with tough, tough, tough questions, because I can always bounce them to my guest. Text me at 707-200-1099. We can get it here on my iPad and take your question that way if you're a little bit shy about calling in. Or go to the web, hopetv.org/disclosure. And there you'll find links to Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, 1,000 different ways that you can join the discussion. Pastor Daniel McKibben is my guest tonight. We are going through the book of Daniel chapter 4, and we've kind of looked at the fact that Nebuchadnezzar is resting after a long career. He's built this great Babylon. I think at one point he says, "Is this not great Babylon that I have built?" Yes. So we're kind of getting to the root of the problem, and God sends him a dream. So I'm going to ask you, take me into that dream a little bit. It's a dream about a tree. What am I supposed to learn from this dream?
Well, there's a lot you can learn. This tree grows up, and the holy watcher says to cut it down. And so, first of all, I think you already nailed it on the head. It's very much a chapter about pride. Is that Nebuchadnezzar was very arrogant and proud, and God had to humble him so that he could produce fruit. And he didn't destroy Nebuchadnezzar, but he did humble his pride very, very deeply.
Now, you reminded me of a story one time where Jesus had a group of people, and the disciples are arguing about who's going to be greatest in the kingdom.
Yes.
And he takes a little child and says, "Unless you become like this." And that's always struck me that in that story, Jesus actually specifies what he meant by that. I mean, I'm wondering, what does that kid have that the disciples are missing? He says, "Unless you humble yourself and be like this child." And it occurs to me, humble's the one thing you can't teach yourself, is it?
No.
I mean, how do you teach yourself to be humble? I don't know how you'd even do that. Put a chart on the wall and put stickers up, "Today I was extra humble, give myself a star and make a real..." So Nebuchadnezzar's probably not going to figure out how to humble himself. Mm. God does it.
Yes, that's
right. And this dream is instrumental. Take me into the dream a little bit more.
Yeah, so Nebuchadnezzar, he's out in his palace, and he's looking at his palace and says, "This is the great Babylon, which I have built by my own hand." And a holy watcher comes down from heaven, and he says to Nebuchadnezzar, "This is it." And he just zaps him, I guess. And he just goes crazy and becomes like a wild animal and goes out and eats grass, and his hair grows long, and he's literally shone like a wild animal for 7 years, just living off of the land type of thing.
Well, let me ask you some things about the story. Let's dig into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't read the story, that was a wonderful synopsis. I'd encourage you after the program tonight to read through this very carefully, because there's remarkable detail. He sees this tree... in the midst of the earth, its height is great. The tree grew and became strong. All the beasts of the field, it says in verse 12, found shade under it. And when he doesn't understand, Daniel comes back and starts to explain this to him. Daniel comes back and has to explain a lot to this king. He's kind of a slow study like I am. Mm-hmm. And he explains, "Look, this is you. This tree is you and your kingdom. Mm. The tree which you saw in verse 20, which grew and became strong, whose height reached to the heavens, which could be seen by all the earth, whose leaves were lovely and its fruit abundant, and which was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelled, the branches and the birds of the heaven had their home. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong. Your greatness has grown, reaches to the heavens, your dominion to the end of the earth." Now, he's got this incredible kingdom. He's got an incredible position of responsibility. And we find out in other chapters, like Daniel chapter 2, Daniel says, you know, "The head of gold is you. God has given you this kingdom." So here's the question. God made him this all-powerful king, or permitted this to happen. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that God will work through a non-believer in this world? I mean, he's got all the Israelites at his disposal. Why is he picking a pagan king?
There are several answers to that, Sean, and they're very important for today's Christian world. Number one is that the Israelites, they were going away from God and not obeying Him and not honoring Him. And the same thing can happen in the Christian world today. Just because we know Jesus and we believe we're saved, it doesn't mean that we are secure like Nebuchadnezzar was secure. And the other thing is, yes, God uses pagan people, and He speaks through pagan people. And one of my favorite chapters on this in the Bible is Romans chapter 2 and Romans chapter 1. And it really tells us that God is no respecter of persons. And this is really important as Christians, Sean, that we understand this. Romans chapter 2 and verse 11, "For there is no respect of persons with God." Now, who is Paul talking to here? He's exclusively addressing the Jewish people.
Right.
Because the Jews, well, we're God's chosen people. We are His favored people. Hey, let's pat ourselves on the back. But then Paul goes on to say In the next couple of verses, start with verse 13.
Okay.
For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. You see, the Jews were hearing the law all the time, but they weren't in obedience to God. And then I like verse 14 and 15. You want to read that for us?
Yeah. Romans 2, verse 14. For when Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do the things in the law, these, although not having the law, are a law to themselves, in verse 15, who show the work of the law written in their hearts.
In their hearts.
Their conscience also bearing witness, and between themselves and their thoughts accusing or else excusing them.
You know, what is this saying to us, Sean? It is saying that it's not your profession. Just because you call yourself a Jew, according to Paul, that doesn't mean anything. What means something is that if you're in obedience to God. And God saw underneath all the pride and arrogance of Nebuchadnezzar a good heart. And he saw a man that if he worked with him long enough, that he would come to God and he would surrender his life to God. And so I love that about God. He doesn't respect you. Just because you say you're this religion or that religion doesn't mean you're God's favored person. What means something is if you have a heart for God and you're in obedience to Him.
Well, what does that tell us as Christians now? I mean, let's move forward 25, some 100 years and ask the question, how do we relate to people who are not of our faith? What assumptions should we make or not make about the people around us?
Oh, well, the assumptions we should not make is just because they're not a Christian or even an atheist or an agnostic is that they're hell-bent and that they're no good people. You know, some people are atheists for very intelligent reasons because we Christians misrepresent God.
Yeah, we sure do.
And so they have good reason not to be Christians, at least some good reasons. Now, there's a lot of other good reasons they should become Christians. But certainly there's some very intelligent thinking people out there that are not Christians, atheists, agnostics, and we need to respect them, and like Daniel did with Nebuchadnezzar here.
Well, he does respect him. Here's something I'm wondering. God gives him this kingdom. And you see him using other pagan kings as well. Cyrus liberates God's people, but he's not likely a believer. Mm. And Cyrus in Isaiah 44, 45 is called God's anointed. He's called God's servant. So is God using these people? I mean, not just using them. Is he using them against their will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what's it mean to be used against God's will is that, you know, God speaks to us through circumstances, and when we're not following Him, sometimes He allows very bad things to happen to us. And even when we are following Him, sometimes very bad things happen to us. What God is doing here with Nebuchadnezzar, something bad happens to him, he turns into an animal. Well, yeah, that was against Nebuchadnezzar's will, but in the end, Nebuchadnezzar had to make a choice of his own. Am I going to let this circumstance teach me a lesson, or am I going to shake my puny fist at God and say, I am refusing to listen to you, God, and I'll be an animal the rest of my life if you want me to?
All right. It's clear God established this kingdom. God's intent on using Nebuchadnezzar. It's interesting to me that after Israel failed God for all those centuries, God does His most powerful works publicly through a pagan king that, incidentally, Israel was supposed to have reached by sharing the good news they had. But he kind of blows it too. He's full of pride. He says, I gave myself this kingdom, which just wasn't true. And then a watcher is mentioned. You mentioned this a moment ago. In verse 13, it talks about a watcher. Now, we're just about up against another break. Who is this watcher? A holy one comes down from heaven. Who is this, and what does this tell us about God?
Well, there's several scriptures that we can look at that would indicate very strongly that this Holy One is actually Jesus Christ or God Himself.
Now, so this would be Jesus pre-incarnate, before He is a human being.
That's right. And you know, we look at the Godhead, and so in the Old Testament, they didn't understand Jesus as we know Him today. And so, yeah, this is probably God. It could have been an angel, but I favor it being God for several verses that I read out of this.
Okay, so we can't really be dogmatic, but there's a good likelihood it's Jesus and He's a watcher. What does that tell me about God? I mean, we're just about up against the break again. We might have to pause, but what does it tell us about God that he's described possibly as a watcher?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly God cares for every single person on this earth. And he loves each one of us, whether we believe in him or don't believe in him, whether we love him or hate him, he loves everyone. He watches us and takes care of us, just like he did with Nebuchadnezzar in all of his years of being a pagan.
It's an amazing story. So I saw visions. It's in verse 13, Daniel 4:13. I saw in the visions of my head while I was on my bed, there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He cried aloud and said, "Thus chop down the tree, cut off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it and the birds from its branches." Now, here we are up against the break. We're going to come right back to that. I'm going to ask you a few questions about what happens with Nebuchadnezzar. Is this the end of him? Mm-hmm. And what can we learn about our day and age right now? Don't forget, when you call in, you'll be entered into a draw to win this book, The Presence. This is the prophecies found in the Old Testament sanctuary about the end of the world. That's what this book is about. And if we take your call live on the air, you will get a copy of this book. We're going to take a short break. Don't forget, it's time to call in soon, 888-730-HOPE. I'll be right back with Pastor Daniel McKibben and Daniel chapter 4.
Dr. Luke believed in letting the church know the amazing things that God was doing through the ministry of Paul and his evangelism team. But how do you know if you're sharing for the right motive? When would it be dangerous to share all that God has done? We'll talk about letting the church know this week on Hope Sabbath School. I invite you to join us.
And we're back. And in just a few moments, you're going to be able to join the program. The contact information is on your screen right now to call in. I'm with Pastor Daniel McKibben. And just before the break, we noticed that Nebuchadnezzar was prideful. He thought the kingdom was his. He created Babylon. God takes everything away. He loses his mind for 7 years. Is that the end of Nebuchadnezzar? I mean, no. God says, that's it. I'm squashing you like a bug. It's done.
Well, that's how some people want to paint God, is that he's just up there, folded his arms, and he wants to kill people. That's not God. The God of the Bible is very forgiving, but not only forgiving, restoring. So he says, chop down the tree, put a band around the stump, meaning that he was going to preserve Nebuchadnezzar. And so that time of preservation was a time of humbling for Nebuchadnezzar. He learned his lesson, and God restored him to favor with himself, with his kingdom, and with his people. And I just think it's so fantastic about God. God not only forgives you and anybody in the viewing audience, he also can restore what Satan has removed from you. God is a God of love.
So what should I be learning from this? There are tough things that happen in life. Sometimes it's just not God doing it to me. Sometimes we blame God too quickly. But sometimes it appears from the stories, especially this one, that God will allow things on occasion. Mm-hmm. Devil might even be doing them, but he'll allow things. What does this tell me about what God's ultimate desire is? He's not trying to lose me.
No, he's not. In any discipline that comes into our lives, any stress or disease or anything like that, God wants to use that to restore our relationship with him and bring joy and happiness into our lives. Now, that's not to say that God brings disease on people or burns your house down or whatever it is. God takes circumstances and he uses them for the good of that person and the good of society and the world.
Well, you know, Pastor, I think we've got some people starting to call in, but before we get to that, I want to make a last day application just before we forget to, because all of these stories point to the last days. Nebuchadnezzar loses his mind. It's like God cuts him adrift, saying, look, I was the one who gave you all this, and if you think you did it, let's see what you look like on your own. Mm. How does that lesson apply in the last day scenario that prophecy paints?
Well, you know, prophecy tells us about the seven last plagues in the book of Revelation, and right before that and right around that time is that people have made their choice not to follow God, and other people have made their choice to follow God. Those who have shaken their puny fist at God say, I want it on my own. And God says, okay, I'm not going to force your will. You want it, and so I'm going to let you know what it feels like to serve who you want to serve, and that's Satan.
Right.
And so he just turns them over to their own lusts, their own animalism, as he did with Nebuchadnezzar.
So when we see a real decline in civilization in our day and age now, as was prophesied, you know, Paul said in the last days, troublous times will come. We've studied that quite a bit. Is it possible that the insanity we see in our world, I mean, five cases of cannibalism in the last week or two, that some of the insanity, some of the crazy behavior might just be the fact that we've let go of God?
Well, you know, the medical condition that Nebuchadnezzar had is called lycanthropy. And it's an actual disease that takes hold of the mind, and people believe they become an animal, sometimes a wolf or a bear or a tiger or something like that. And so like this case in Florida, Miami, Florida, just a few weeks ago.
Right, yeah, that's the one I was thinking about.
This guy's insane. He's eating this guy's face, and the authorities couldn't stop him. They finally had to shoot him to get him off of this other guy. This is like a Nebuchadnezzar all over again, but a lot worse. And so like you said at the beginning of the program, Sean, I think people are making decisions not to follow God. He says, okay, I'm not going to force you to follow me. I'm going to allow you to follow the lust of your own heart, your animalistic propensities. I will give you free rein to those, and look what's happening in our world today.
Yeah, is that God doesn't force us into his family. He lets us have what we asked for.
That's right.
But he does have a plan to bring it to an end. We've got Steve calling from Nebraska tonight. Steve, how are things in Nebraska? Has the long, hard winter finally come to an end?
Oh, yeah. It's actually really hot.
Oh, it's hot in Nebraska. That's not something I hear all the time, but I guess you do have hot summers there.
Hey, apparently it's summer.
Hey, Steve, what's your question for Pastor McKibben on Daniel chapter 4 tonight?
Yeah, I have two questions.
Okay.
The first question would be, did King Nebuchadnezzar write the book or the chapter Daniel 4?
Okay, did Nebuchadnezzar write Daniel 4? And the other question.
The question is, verse 33, at the end of verse 33, it says, his body was wet with the dew of heaven, so his hair had grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws.
Right,
so,
right.
So did King Nebuchadnezzar actually turn into a beast, or was it just, you know, he was just compared with a beast?
Oh, wow, great questions. Did he write this, and did he actually turn into a beast? Well, Pastor, we might not be able to handle them both before the break, but what do you think?
Let me grab the second question first.
Okay.
I think this is analogy, and the Bible, especially Daniel and Revelation, use analogies, and this is very much one here, and so his hair grew like eagle's feathers. It doesn't say they were eagle's feathers. So eagle's feathers are very long, and his hair got very long and matted and just like an animal. Yeah, so I think that was an analogy. Very good question.
Yeah, he's driven, ate grass like oxen. His body was dead till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers, his nails like bird's claws.
Yeah.
They're trying to describe how unkempt he became as he lost his mind. Now, it's written in the first person. It's like him speaking. Did he write this section of the book?
Yes, he certainly did. And what's a surprise to a lot of people is that pagans or non-believers have actually written part of the Bible. And you know what? I think that makes the Bible very real. And we like to think the Bible is this some sanctimonious thing that can't be touched, but it was actually some pagans contributed as well.
That's remarkable. When you think about it, this guy is writing, but he's come to the point where he can tell the honest truth.
Yes.
I messed up,
yes,
but I'm ready to come home. I'm ready
to
come to the God of heaven. Can you believe we're up against the next break already? When you study prophecy, time slips away so fast. Don't forget, everybody who calls in tonight, we take your call on the air. You get a copy of The Presence. book on the prophecies found in the Old Testament sanctuary, what they say about the last days. And you'll also be entered for a draw if you call in and we don't take your question on the air. You still have a chance to get one of those books. We're going to be right back with more of your questions in just a moment. We'll take your calls live. We'll get to your text and social media questions. And we're going to look at the wrap-up in this story in Daniel chapter 4 and what it means for you right now. So don't you go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
It seems to me that the best way to eat our food is perfectly natural, ripened on the tree or on the vine. Then we know that we're getting the whole summer goodness of that particular food. But when we can't preserve it in any other way than perhaps by drying it, we still preserve a lot of the goodness. One of my favorites are dried mangoes, especially these things that come from the Philippines. When I go there, I've got a very good friend. He always loads me up with these mango slices, and I just love them. The problem is, I can eat so many of them. One needs to be careful because you can get too much of a good thing. In fact, when I read the label, I almost fell over because 6 little pieces of this delicious dried mango has got about 150 calories. Woohoo! Be careful.
And we're back looking at Daniel chapter 4. I'm with Pastor Daniel McKibben. Nebuchadnezzar thought that he had built the great empire of Babylon. He discovers that God allowed him to do it, that God had set him up as a protectorate over the earth. And it tells us something about what God actually expects from us if we're in a position of influence, power. He loses everything. He loses his mind. He becomes like an animal for 7 years. Basically, God saying, you think you did this? Let's see what you look like. When you're on your own, if you don't know the God of heaven. And we just had a couple of questions come in from Nebraska. And actually, Pastor, we now have Marla with a YouTube question. So let's take a look at that one.
Okay. Nebuchadnezzar is in this mess because of his pride and how amazing Babylon is. If Babylon is so great, why isn't it destroyed or conquered before he returns to sanity?
Oh, wow. Now, there's a great question, one that I've never actually thought of. He's off the throne, and he's eating grass like an ox, and he's got long hair like and claws like an eagle. He's out of his mind for 7 years, and he just conquered the world. Why didn't somebody take over Babylon?
Well, as the old saying goes, great leaders have great people behind them. And so I believe, the Bible doesn't say it, but I believe that Nebuchadnezzar had great people behind him. And a great leader also mentors people below them so they can take over their position. That's what I tried to do as a pastor, is try to mentor people so that if I ever got sick or something happened, they could take over my position. I'm only speculating. The Bible doesn't say that.
Well, you know, it actually gives me something to think about, and I'm speculating too, but Daniel is placed in a real position of influence.
Yes.
And so there is somebody there who's godly, who does recognize who allowed this kingdom to prosper, and has been put in a great position of influence over and over again. So, I mean, Daniel must have had some influence, because I've always wondered, the Magi who came from the east to find the Christ child, how did they find those prophecies of that star? I mean, they came from the region of Chaldea. Did Daniel tell that story? Did he show them the scriptures? He must have had some. It's a fascinating question, I guess, when we get to heaven.
Well, not only that, Nebuchadnezzar really appreciated Daniel, and I'm sure once this happened, Daniel had a very much influence, as you say, Sean. And so he probably partially ran Babylon during those 7 years' time.
Which is a fascinating thought. And we are speculating. We should be probably pretty clear about that. Speculating. But it's a fascinating thought. And it's believable because as you look at this story, Daniel actually loves that king.
He does.
He's a servant and a slave to that king, but he loves him.
And the king loves Daniel as well. And this is a real lesson. We need to treat unbelievers with a lot of respect and a lot of love.
It's remarkable to me. And it tells me something about how we ought to handle people and how God can put us in people's favor when it's time for them to come to the Lord. I think we've got another YouTube question from Elisa. So let's take that one in the moments we have left.
Doesn't the iron band around the tree prove that once a person has been touched by God, it is impossible to be lost?
Wow. All right. There's a band around the tree which says that Nebuchadnezzar, it's not forever. It's just for 7 years. I'm going to preserve it. The tree's going to come back. And he slipped up. Is that evidence that, and I was raised with this idea that once you sort of come into any kind of relationship with God, you're in forever and it's done. Is that text, does this story prove that once you're with God in any way, shape, or form, you're in forever?
No, I really don't think it does prove that. There are other texts like in Matthew 3 and verse 20 where John the Baptist says, now is the axe laid to the root of the tree, it's going to be rooted out and thrown in the fire, demonstrating a total annihilation. However, this story here, the band is put around it because God knows the future. He knows Nebuchadnezzar's heart. He knows that in the end, Nebuchadnezzar is going to surrender to him. Now, back to that story or that verse in Matthew 3. Do you know who Jesus is addressing in that? Or, I mean, John the Baptist is addressing in that story?
These are the religious leaders.
The religious leaders. And they are ones that apparently have surrendered to God and are apparently preaching His word every week, and they're doing all the right things. And John the Baptist says they're going to be rooted out, thrown into the fire. And so I don't think this story teaches that. This story teaches us the love and the mercy and the forgiveness and the restorative power that God has. However, it can be dangerous to think, well, once I'm in, I don't have to grow anymore, I don't have to learn anymore, I don't have to surrender anymore because I'm in.
Well, even Paul said, I've got to be careful to run the race faithfully because I don't want to preach to others and then find I myself have become a castaway.
Now, how could Paul become a castaway? I mean, that's an incredible thought, but he considered that possibility, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. So there is a biblical thread. You know, the Bible says nothing can separate us from the love of God. Nobody can rip us out of God's hand, and He's not going to cast us aside. Mm-hmm. The one thing that's not in the list is you and your free will.
That's right.
You can always say, no, I don't want this anymore.
No, that's right, and that's what God respects. A matter of fact, that's why we're in this mess right now, because God respects free human will. He even respected the will of Lucifer, and that's why we're here today. And so if a person wants to be lost, and then they can be lost.
God just doesn't force. It's not in His nature. Yeah. Let me ask you this question. As Pastor Daniel McKibben reads Daniel chapter 4, there's a powerful story, and we barely scraped the surface of it. Mm-hmm. What do you come away with from this story? What is it that you know about God better than you did a moment ago if you read this chapter?
Well, I think the biggest point of the story is pride. Human pride is God is able to put human pride down. And certainly, Sean, I have had my experiences with my pride being brought down because...
Yeah, me too.
you know, God works with all of us, and He's very merciful. But when we show that arrogance and pride, God has to deal with that because it's going to destroy us, and He knows it is, Sean. And so what I learn about God is He loves me too much to allow me to do something destructive that will destroy me forever. And so He deals with me in the good as well as the bad. I praise God for that.
And I do too. Well, I have been so thrilled that I have got Pastor Daniel on the book of Daniel tonight. And can you believe it? We have burned through almost an entire program. And I just want to thank you for coming on the show tonight. And there is so much more. We're going to talk about Daniel 4 in just a moment again. Just a few more thoughts on this important prophetic story. And next week, we're going to look at God's perspective on human government, what the book of Daniel says about the way God thinks about our governments. And that's a big story, especially when we're headed into another election season here in the United States. We're not quite done with today's discussion. I'm going to come back in just a moment with a few more thoughts on Daniel chapter 4.
Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does He withhold from those whose walk is blameless. Lord Almighty, blessed is the one who trusts in You.
actually happens when a person, or a nation, or an entire civilization loses its grip on God? What happens when we lose sight of the fact that everything we have and everything we are is a gift from the Creator? What does humanity look like when it's disconnected from the giver and sustainer of life? Well, the Bible says quite plainly that the wages of sin is death. But that's not an immediate death. It's more like an electric fan that gets unplugged. The blades keep moving for a little while, and then eventually it comes to a stop. It's like a car that runs out of gas. It might go for another block or two just on sheer momentum, but eventually that car dies on the side of the road. And the same thing's true with our planet in rebellion against God. The book of Colossians actually identifies Jesus as the one who made our world in the first place. Paul writes, "For by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created through him, and for him." But then Paul adds something very important. He says, "And he is before all things, and in him all things consist." In other words, there'd be nothing without Jesus. And when you disconnect from the only source of life, that ends in death. But the problem is bigger and more immediate than just death. Without God, without a reliable reference point for morality, what evidence do you have that your thoughts are actually good thoughts? How do you know that your mind is capable of perceiving reality the way it actually is? How do you make good decisions without really knowing what a good decision is? You know, the book of Revelation predicts a day when you're going to need something more than the evidence of your senses to understand what's real. It says in Revelation 16, verse 13, "I saw three unclean spirits that looked like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are the spirits of demons, performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth and of the whole world." You know, it seems like our world is losing its mind. And maybe that's because we really are. Maybe we're living with the consequences of a world that's being run by fallible, self-centered, sinful human beings. Maybe we've got what we originally asked for: utter independence, an existence utterly detached from God. You know, Nebuchadnezzar's story shows us exactly how that ends. But it also shows us what could be. No matter how things are, no matter how lost you feel, no matter how badly you behaved, right now there's still time to come back home. And God is more than willing to restore you in His own image. There's a band around the human race, a band created by the love of Jesus Christ. And He holds out hope for you. He gave His life because He knows there's still the potential for you to become a child of God. It is not too late at this moment. And I can't think of a better moment to come to our senses than right now before Jesus comes. I'm Sean Boonstra, and you've been watching Disclosure.